I'm Bob McCaslin, and I'm running for State Representative, 4th District, Position 1.
Representative McCaslin, you're running for your fourth term now. I'm just curious as to how do you evaluate a legislative session, whether it was successful and about your role in it?
It's not always, considering we're in the minority, it's not always in the passage of bills, because I think I've voted on a lot of bills that started out one way and wound up being something totally different. And I really, you know, we work really hard to make sure that a bill addresses a problem, or it encourages, a certain kind of behavior of some kind or another. And so I for instance, I had a bill that was dealing with the Hearst water rights case. And basically what my bill did was it allowed schools to hook up to water outside the urban growth boundary. And so what that did was it, first of all, it solved a problem for schools who were often having difficulties procuring land to build a school on, but it also made sure that they could get access to the water. And then, of course, we know that housing usually follows the building of schools and vice versa. But it made it through the House and the Senate. It's a very successful bill. The governor promised our minority leader at the time, Dan Christensen, that he would sign the bill, and he promised that he wouldn't veto it. And he vetoed it. And so I'm hoping that there'll be another chance this next session to run the same bill, because we still are dealing with some of the same problems. And I try to stick with things that I know are pressing problems, you know, for the local area, and our schools are our largest employer. So it makes sense.
So we've been living with the coronavirus now for about 7 or 8 months. And how would you evaluate how Governor Inslee has and his administration have handled it?
Well, to be honest with you, Doug, it's I say that I'm being honest the whole way through, but I think that it's, you know, when you pick losers and winners, sometimes just on the basis of what kind of tax revenue they generate, that can be a big problem. And so while while our pot shops and dispensaries and grow shops have continued to do just great business, we've had other businesses that were considered not essential, like office supply stores and things like that. And so I think it's, you know, if you could run the marijuana industry full tilt and be able to do that safely, then I think we can apply those same criteria to most businesses too. And I think, boy, a lot of our local businesses have been ingenious in how they've proven themselves to be essential, but not always are they considered that, you know, by the governor's office. And so, and by labors and industries too. So it's been problematic at best.
You made reference to property taxes. Do you think that was the governor's motivation for deciding which businesses would close and which should stay open?
Tax revenue, I believe, was it. Not property taxes especially, although you know, those businesses who own property, of course, are paying property taxes too. Everybody pays property taxes. You know, there isn't any let up in that. And so I think, you know, I just think that there's, if we allow businesses to use their own ingenuity and be able to prove that they've that they're essential. And I think in most cases they're essential because they are providing tax revenue to the state, but they're also providing for their own families and their own employees. And I think that's pretty essential. So when I look at the latest CDC figures, and I don't have them in front of me right now, I think it indicates that, you know, we've really flatlined in a lot of places. And, you know, the coronavirus affects most people. It would affect me, according to the scientific data, because I'm over 60 and I'm a type 1 diabetic. And I've been very careful as a result. My behavior has changed, and I've been very careful. But the people who have passed away are, for the most part, people who are over 70 and have pre-existing conditions. And so, you know, we're in a position right now where I think it's getting harder and harder for people to find, you know, information like that on the CDC website and also our state health and county health websites. And so it seems at times that there's that panic is being spread instead of, you know, the real data. And the real data tells us, I believe, that just from looking at it and studying it for the last couple of months, that we're dealing with a serious virus, but we're also dealing with something, I believe, that people can build up an immunity to. And that's never being talked about. And being able to test for that, I think, may be just as important as being able to test whether somebody has the virus. Because if somebody has an immunity, then that can indicate hardiness. And so as a result, you know, those kids that have that, you know, should be able to come to school. I think we're not doing a completely thorough job with all of the information that we do have.
So the state has paused allowing counties to move on in the coronavirus protocol. Do you think the state should get back to allowing counties, especially those who are less populous and have fewer cases, do you think the state should allow those counties to continue to reopen their economies?
Absolutely. And I think the, you know, I know our own county commissioners pretty well, and they are, they've said, hey, you know, of course we want to keep our citizens safe, but we also want to be able to if there's less danger, let's move on ahead. And I agree with them. It's a situation where especially when you look at the mental health problems that are resulting, you know, from sheltering in place. A lot of our students, you know, who've been sheltered in place all this time. There's been a higher case of domestic violence. There have been other mental health problems that have resulted from that. And I don't think the governor or our health officials are taking those as seriously as they should. And so I believe, I really believe there's a way to open safely. And I think businesses, you know, people who have started businesses are ingenious that they've been able to start their own business and be successful at that. So I think often we don't give our business owners or our school districts enough credit to be able to actually do this.
So the coronavirus has brought more attention to the role of public health. Do you support providing more stable state funding for public health?
Well, I think that's difficult to do when we have so few healthcare companies in our state. And when we adopted Obamacare early on, we were the first state to do so. We lost a lot of healthcare companies. And so one of the things that brings down the cost of healthcare is competition, you know, in any given area, not just healthcare. And so when we did that and we saw all those healthcare companies leave to go to other states, we seriously hurt ourselves, I believe. And so, you know, the cost of healthcare has gone up as a result. And of course, we've had more people covered who couldn't pay for healthcare in the past. But there hasn't been a lot of serious discussions about how do we get more healthcare payers. Well, we have to get people to work to do that. And as a person who worked minimum wage jobs without any healthcare benefits being provided, I knew if I stuck with it that I could get to a point where I could have my benefits covered. And so it's you know, I think it's a two-edged sword. On one hand, we've covered a lot more people that couldn't get coverage before, but we've lost a lot of people because we haven't had enough healthcare companies involved in that whole process, and the affordability for people who are above minimum wage has been very, very difficult. And so any solution is going to have to deal with how do we create a situation where we're drawing more healthcare companies to our state.
So let's turn to police reform. We know that the governor has created a commission to look into police accountability and transparency issues. They've been talking about things like restrictions on chokeholds and that sort of thing. What do you think about this particular topic? Is it better discussed at the local level or the state level or both?
Well, you know, I think local control usually works better than control from higher up, because higher up usually deals more with one size fits all kinds of situations. And I truly believe that by buying into a lot of the rhetoric that's happening today, we've encouraged almost, and by we, I don't mean myself, but our culture seems to be encouraging every law enforcement officer is guilty until proven innocent. And I know a lot of law enforcement officers, and I have good friends in the State Patrol and in the Sheriff's Department and Spokane Valley Police Department. And I've met very few unlikable people who don't truly care about their communities. And so it's a kind of, I mean, today, you know, racism is a huge topic, and yet it's, and are there racist cops out there? Definitely. I think you could find racists in every designation of life, you know, whether it's a person who does a certain job or not. But I don't think it's as prevalent as many would propose that there is. And I hate the idea that somebody can't help but be a racist in today's culture, because you know, I have a lot of African American friends, and I'm sure not one of them would tell me that I grew up, because of how I was raised in an all white family, I couldn't help but be a racist, because my behavior and how I speak and what I do doesn't reflect that whatsoever. And I think that's the bottom line. You know, for if someone's going to be labeled a racist, it there has to be proof that they, from things they've said and things that they've done. And so I you know, as far as law enforcement goes, I support our law enforcement people. And if they've been proved by a fair investigation that they are a racist, then they don't belong in law enforcement, and they probably need to seek counseling. But I don't think there's as many of those kind of people in our society as is being proposed nowadays.
Do you think that the governor has sort of overreacted, our whole society has overreacted on this issue?
I think it's a bit of an overreaction. And by being on several task forces myself on different issues, and study groups, I don't think a lot of is accomplished by that. And only because there seems to be a disconnect between what we discover in those study groups and those and the places where we're not actually doing anything, we're just studying it, and then connecting that to actually doing something. Because sometimes, and here comes politics, depending on what side of the aisle you're on, and I've seen bad behavior on both, so don't get me wrong, I'm not talking about just Democrats or just Republicans. I think the more studies we do and the less action we take, I'm not in favor of making presumptions and going on that, but I think there's plenty of studies done nationwide, worldwide, that can tell us all kinds of things. And then we can usually take that information and put it into action to make a difference. But a lot of times, you know, at the state level, the things that we take action on aren't as effective as they can be. And a lot of it has to do with where all the time we wasted on doing the study.
So let's turn now to wildfires. I thought that we were going to get away with a fairly easy wildfire season, and then Labor Day rolled around. Lands Commissioner Hillary Franz has proposed a small tax on certain liability insurance premiums to create a dedicated source for funding for wildfire prevention and suppression costs. Is that something you would support?
You know, I'm not really in support of that, only because I think there's a much more effective way to do this. And Hillary has started down this path by bringing the private sector in, but it's been a disincentive to put it up to a lottery so that they have to pay to be involved. I think as long as timber management company can come in and meet certain criterias, but I think when you have to pay to play, it's a disincentive to do it. Yes, we've managed, according to Hillary, 70,000 acres of land, but that's just a drop in the bucket when it comes to the amount of land that needs to be managed. And I think we could have much more buy-in from the private sector. People who do this for a living actually know how to do it. And I think if we just gave them several, you know, we can't have clear cutting, but I don't know of any timber company that does that anymore. I mean, they know how dangerous that is and how hard it is to bring back forest after you clear cut it. So that's not even an issue anymore. I think the issue really is for the state to stop purchasing land every year and allow private ownership of land more, and also allow these private timber companies to collaborate with the landowners to manage the forest. Because I think anybody who wants to buy land doesn't want it to be consumed by a wildfire. So I've been pushing for this for quite a while, but we just haven't gotten before Hillary was in, we couldn't have any discussions about bringing in the private sector. In fact, a good friend of mine at the freshman House Representative breakfast with the governor, Mark Harmsworth, suggested to the governor, have you thought of dealing with our wildfires by bringing the private sector? He says, no, that would be too expensive. And then he changed the subject. And so, I mean, that stays front and center of my mind when you have our chief executive in the state of Washington who doesn't even want to consider alternatives to what's been going on in the past, which has been a complete failure. That's problematic. And so, I know Sue Keel Peterson, who's running for Commissioner of Public Lands, has some great plans in place, I think, that would incorporate the private sector. So that's why I endorsed her.
So I've been asking all the candidates, you are asking people to vote for you, but when you have the ballot in your hand, what are the qualities that you look for in candidates to ensure they get your vote?
Well, I think it, first of all, you have to take the time to do the research. And so I've called a lot of, like Sue Keel Peterson, I called her on the phone and asked her to tell me what she believed and what the most urgent problems were in that job as Commissioner of Public Lands. And I was impressed with her priorities. And it really, it wasn't that she agreed with me on every subject. It was that she had sometimes better ideas than I did because of her background in science and working in the fisheries department. And so I was impressed by that. I think if there's a way to contact the person, I've tried to get a hold of them, and I've had several conversations with a lot of different candidates over, you know, since filing. And that's been very effective, and it was not real time consuming. So, you know, I urge voters to, if they can call people, to do that and to read as much on them as possible. And, because I, you know, with the political divide just getting wider and wider, I think it's really important for people to do that and not make assumptions. And that's the, and I think, you know, being a politician myself, I have to be very careful that I'm not making assumptions about people and what they believe and what kind of job they would do without reading about them. And if I can't find the information about where they stand on the subject, then call them and do more searches to find out that information. It's more important nowadays than ever before, I believe, to be an informed voter.
Representative McCaslin, those were my questions. Is there anything that you wanted to raise before we part here?
Well, I think it's really important, and this has been a basic tenet of you know, and we've talked before, Doug, on just what the function of government is. And I think it's we've got a pretty ingenious document when it comes to our state constitution. And I would say the same for our federal constitution. It's important that anybody running for office has a really clear idea of what they think the function of government is. And I think and seeing how many child cares have gone out of business in our state, it was probably not a great idea to create the Department of Children, Youth and Families and the Department of Early Learning before it. And public school districts do a great job in childcare? I believe they do, but it's also the most expensive way to do it. And so there has to be other alternatives. The more choices we have in all the given areas, the better, you know, whether it's healthcare companies or childcares or companies that can help us do good land management so we don't have so many wildfires. Those are all important.